Is Eric back there?
Yeah.
Okay, we're good. You should have your Bibles open to Proverbs chapter 2. We are looking now at verse 8. That is the fourth component that forms an exhortation to a son, especially in connection with him going through his sonship establishment. And just as at the end of it, our Father probed our hearts with five probing questions, these five components that you find in Proverbs 2, 6, 7, and 8 all match up in order with those five probing questions. This fourth one we looked at, not in any detail, but to try to do what I thought was appropriate to bring back into our minds some of the critical things and elements of who is he that condemneth, and then the godly remedy is Christ that died, yea, rather that is risen, who is even at the right hand of God, who also maketh intercession for us. But now what I want to do is start to put it together with some things that maybe we haven't said about this. We talked a lot about the sonship graces or those sonship opportunities that are opted out of. Well, if you've opted out of it, you're not just standing there doing nothing. You're doing something else. In other words, you've opted for something else. And that's going to be developed here. When you go to match up the fourth probing question of Romans 8:34 with the corresponding exhortation to the son's commitment to the effectual working of what he's learning, that corresponding exhortation being given here in Proverbs 2:8a, just the first phrase to the comma, he keepeth the paths of judgment. Let's first of all take note, as we match these up, of where I did this before with the first side A of this, the first who question, and the buckler issue matching up to it. And I asked you, where were you first made aware as a son that you yourself were going to be a problem? Because the Father made you aware of that. Do you remember where it was? You're not far from it in your Bible. Yeah, what verse is that? Proverbs 1, 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise it. You have the potential, son, of being a fool in my sight. And how's that going to happen? With you being your own worst enemy, despising wisdom and instruction. Well, just as you were made aware of that, let's take note of where you were first made aware of part B to this. That's part A, matching up with the whole issue of who is the charge issue and the buckler issue. Now, when it comes to who is he that condemneth, when it comes to part B of you being your own worst enemy, opting out of these paths that your Father would have you go down, we need to find where we were first made aware of this side of the coin. Because what you'll be able to put together is the issue of how you're going to be tempted to reject that path and opt for another one. And that's important to fully round this out and make this part of this exhortation to your commitment level. Because there is a place where you are made aware of you being your own worst enemy in this sense, in the sense of going down another path and not staying on the paths of your fathers. Because you'll not only be, by recognizing this, able to put together with how you're going to be tempted to fail and to get the full effectual working of what you're learning, instead of opting for some other option that's redundant, but that appears more attractive and more alluring to you than what your Father teaches you, but you'll know ahead of time in advance that that's going to happen and be able to spot it and recognize it when you see it. And folks, this is something that nearly zero, not all, but nearly zero Christians can do today. The truth of the matter is, they're going down paths their father has nothing to do with. And they're just going down the Yellow Brick Road, singing and dancing and jumping pews and happy all the way to be doing it. And there's a source of all of that. And that's what we need to identify, is where that source comes from. So, granted, we learn from Romans 8:34 that the fourth probing question is all about us, right? Failing to participate in those sonship graces being offered to us as part of our vocational training. They're really vocational training devices, so to speak, places we can put our doctrine into practice. But we've instead opted out of those sonship grace opportunities. We need now to recognize and appreciate that the consequences of opting out of sonship graces mean that we opt for some other paths that we're choosing to walk down instead of what our Father wants us to walk down. And there's something already in place right now, tonight, right here. There is something already in place waiting for you the second that you say no, the second that you opt out, the second that you say, I'd rather not. There is something already in place that's been designed to grab your attention and make an appeal to you, and its path has already been charted, and it's waiting for you to walk down it. I'm trying to make you feel a little bit paranoid. Some godly spiritual paranoia. You can't imagine what has been crafted out for your failure by your enemies. So, there is something waiting to offer you another path, and another one will be made to you. Another appeal, another path, another offer of another path will be made to you. And by the way, in all fleshly, human thinking and feeling, it's going to be a right fit. It's going to look more attractive and more appealing and more alluring to you naturally, in your natural human nature. That is, to your flesh, it's going to be more appealing. To your flesh, it's going to be more alluring and attractive rather than the paths your father offers you in your sonship education. Now, let's identify what that something is that we've been talking about that waits in readiness to offer you an alternative path rather than your sonship path. Excuse me. I'll get through this. I think I'll be better Sunday. Where do you see any place where that would come, where that would be addressed? 2:13. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Is it? Oh, that's one. 2:13. Well, yeah, but you see, we've got a paragraph marking there, and we're dealing with something a little. We're not dealing with something exactly at hand. Yeah, I'd rather you thinking going backwards instead of going forwards. 1:14 and 15. Yeah, and that's really the section we need to look at. But where does it start? Where? Verse 10. As soon as you're being told that you yourself are your own worst enemy in connection with failures that could have you a fool in your father's sight, you get this exhortation beginning in verse 10. And he says, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. And we'll go on through this in a moment, but once you've been made aware from verse 7 of chapter 1 of Proverbs that your first enemy to the success of your sonship life will be you yourself and sin in your members, as we've come to understand and appreciate it, making it so you foolishly despise wisdom and instruction. Verses 10, especially down through verse well, actually runs all the way down through verse 19, but especially down through verse 15, that section right there sets forth your second enemy, or the other side of you being your own worst enemy. It's still you yourself, but there's this other entity, this something out there that tempts you in a specific way so that you opt for an alternative path than that of your father's instruction. Let's read through this. He says, verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that goeth down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse." And then the father says, "My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of the bird of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof." Now, to get through this in one session, take that first verse of this exhortation, verse 10. He says, "My son, if sinners entice thee." Now, at the outset, when you first look at it, it just looks like it doesn't look like that I'm my worst enemy. I'm being enticed. Right. That's the side I didn't tell you about. That's the side we haven't really discussed. That's what you need to now put together. Is that, why am I opting out of this? Because there's another enticing path to walk. And somewhere along the line, sinners have enticed me. Now, before you go laying the whole cause here on sinners, remember, you're the one that's making the decision. And you need to ask this question: where do you encounter sinners? They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Let's be a little more specific. Not a lot, but a little more specific than that. I'm not talking about the justified person. Down at the dollhouse? That's too specific. Oh, I know better than to ask you questions. In the context of what's being talked about here, between his father and his son, where do you encounter sinners? That's true, but that's a little more specific than I wanted you to be. You should have something in mind, huh? That's 99.9% there. Take the course off, and what do you got? The world. Yeah, this world, that's where you find sinners, even us. We are in this world. And by the way, a lot of this has to do with us because we're the culprits here. It's not the sinners. We had to decide to go with them. We're the ones at fault, not the sinners. But what you have to watch out for, and the way this works, the how, the mechanical means by which this works, of you opting out of a sonship grace, you can't opt out of one without opting for, you're going to walk somehow. So you're going to walk either uprightly or you're going to walk not uprightly. And what you've got is, what you may not be aware of, and what is going to be so much fun for me as your pastor in making you aware of, is getting into how the world works. Because there's very few people that know how it works. And I'm not saying I know all of how it works, but I know more than the average bear. And the world is where you encounter sinners. And as Bunny said, what Paul will call in the book of Ephesians, he'll call the course of this world, which is totally charted out by what Paul calls the prince of the power of the air. That's the adversary, Satan himself. The course of this world and the world's enticements are going to set before you as a son powerful, alluring alternatives to the path your father has you walking. And folks, it's going to do that as soon as you begin walking the path that your father has you that your father wants you to walk. Because just as soon as you start walking as a son, and that's one of the major issues of Romans 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Remember, before we got into sonship, what did we call that last major cornerstone of Romans? It was walking worthy of who we are in Christ. And in that sense, it still is that. But you begin doing things in Romans 12. You begin taking the doctrine that you've been taught and start getting more doctrine, and you're putting everything into practice. And as soon as you start walking as a son, the world, that course of this world that Satan charted, the world has got the right. And that's not just so to speak, but you may not, that may be fuzzy right now, but when you start understanding it more, you'll find out that's a good way of putting it. The world has got the right. That is, it's so charted out by the adversary, and he has constructed the course of this world, so to speak, that without his manipulation of it, without his, I'm going to say it this way, it's not totally true, but it's the way to get it across, even without Satan's involvement with it, it's almost like you could say the world has a mind of its own, but it's the mind of the adversary. And he has built the thing, and he has been so genius in the way he's crafted it, so that as saints start to walk as sons, the system of this world is crafted and has been built by the adversary, that is built into the world, is an automatic resistance to godliness, to genuine, biblical, true godliness. Now, granted, you can see a whole bunch of Christians get along quite well in the world and not have any trouble. They're not sons. They're not walking the paths you are about to walk, and that has a form of godliness, but it denies the power thereof. They're going to get along just fine. They're going to be embraced by the world. But I'm telling you that this world system, this course of this world, Satan has built into it an automatic resistance to godliness. And when sons begin to walk the course of their sonship education and come to the issue of having to make decisions in regard to which path to walk, when they're put in a position of making a sonship decision with respect to a particular path to walk, then due to the way in which the course of this world has been constructed and has been composed by the adversary as the prince of the power of the air, it has got built into it an automatic response to godliness, and do automatically offer an ungodly alternative as a different path for you to choose. And hopefully the wheels are turning. Because in some of these cases, some of the ones who are going to come up and entice you the most are going to be other family members, friends, and so-called Christians in your periphery who are going to say, "Why are you going there? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Why don't you come here? We're closer. We have stained glass. We got a choir." There's going to be somebody, there's going to be an instant response automatic in the world to that godly path, and there's going to be an offer of an ungodly alternative as a different path for you to choose. Get ready for it. This should be getting you ready for it. And everything you read in Proverbs 1, verse 11 through 14 especially, but you could also, let's take it from verse 10, but just stop right there at verse 14. Just go from Proverbs 1, 10 through 14 especially. If you pay attention to what's being said there, look what he says, my son, if. Now that's not an if of a third class condition. Maybe you will, maybe you won't encounter sinners. That's an if. That's your if in the English. That's your if of provocation. This will happen. It's going to be provoked. As a son, you're going to provoke this. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. As soon as you and as a son, any son makes the decision that just as it says there, he's already decided the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And I'm not going to be a fool. I'm not going to despise wisdom and instruction. All right? Built into this world is the capacity to take notice of that. I know this sounds almost like science fiction right now, but it has the capacity to take notice of that. And as soon as a son makes that first initial decision, the father knows that at the point of that decision, sinners are going to start enticing him, his son. And they would begin to entice him. They'd come along and say, we got a different path that you need to walk. I think, you know, I've heard it all. I've not heard it all, but I've heard a lot of things. I've heard people say, you guys at that church, you study the Bible too much. That's a criticism in a lot of places. You don't want to study that. You'll go mad studying the Bible too much. Or you people think you know everything. Your pastor knows everything. They don't know me to know how wrong that is. But there's always some backhanded way of saying that you ought to be doing something else. You should be going this place. You should be following this. You should just relax. Have fun on Wednesday nights. Why do you need to go Sunday and Wednesday? Why does that guy need to teach 4 hours? Can't he get it? I've had this. Remember when somebody, I know Cindy knows this, somebody once said, well, can't Mark get it said? Why does he take so long? Why is your services, you know, all teaching? Can't Mark get it said? I've had that laid at me before. No, I can't get it all said. If I had 1,000 lives, I can't get it all said. But the father knows this. He knows that as soon as his son makes that first decision, that the sinners are going to start showing up, and they come along and they begin talking to him. We got a different path that you need to walk. You really need this. You get it in forms of people handing you some dumb book. You need to read this. I've had people do that. That's an offhanded way of saying, you are really screwed up. Why don't you read this and get straight? But there's always someone coming along saying, recognize, okay, you just made your first sonship decision. But now, you need to consider this other path, though. Consider this other thing. And this means that the sinners are going to come to you. By the way, notice, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Who came to who? The sinners came to you. You don't go to them. And you won't go to them. They'll come to you. And they're going to put something in front of you that's designed for you to be allured by, attracted by, and in the end, for you to come with them in the path they're walking. That's what an enticement is, by definition. Let's put it in the terms of the persons, personalize it. An enticer is someone coming to you and presenting to you something for your consideration. I want you to consider this. But the goal in all of that, the goal behind that, if you're an enticer, the goal isn't for you to just roll it over in your mind and consider it. The goal is for you to follow him. on the basis of that what you're considering. I want you to consider this, but at the root of it is, I want you to follow me. They want you to follow them. That's why if sinners entice thee, don't consent to it. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them up alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down to the pit. Why? We shall find. Here's what we're going to find. When we go down this particular path, it's described in some pretty dark language there, but when we go down this path, what are we going to find? We shall find all precious substance. We want to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. We shall fill our houses with spoil. We'll have everything. This is a rosy path that I've got for you. Verse 14, cast in thy lot among us. You know what that is? That's your decision. That's the point of the decision. When he comes along there in verse 14, cast in thy lot among us, that's where you made the decision. That's where the son just made the decision to not opt for his father's path, but to opt for this sinner's path. That's the decision. You're sitting on the path of judgment here, kid. You know, you take your first couple steps down this path of your father's, and suddenly sinners start to entice you. And they come along and say, hey, kid, I see that you're on this particular path here, and it looks like you're going to go walking down this path that your father charted for you. But we want you to know that you should come with us. It's almost like you're standing right there at the crossroads. And they're coming along and saying, we want you to come with us. We're going to lay wait for blood. We're going to lurk privately for the innocent without cause. We're going to find all precious substance. We're going to fill our houses with spoil. When you read that terminology, there's all kinds of enticement to all of this. But all that enticement, if you pay attention to what's being said there in those five verses, especially 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, all that enticement and all that is there is designed to appeal to fleshly desire. Let us all have one purse. Well, that sounds like Obama's theme, isn't it? If you pay attention to what's being said there, you'll realize all the terminology that's being said and what all is being done there is something that feeds your lust. That's what all that is. It's lust feeding. And that's the genius what the adversary has built into the course of this world. And the court, if you go through, we could go through a lot of verses on this in Paul's letters, in our program, in our curriculum, and some of them may leap to mind. But even in Israel's program, as sons, they have to have information about this. That's why for instance, if you were to categorize your flesh, how would you do it? I'm just throwing this out to see if anybody's got this. I know you know it, but I just wanted to see if you were thinking of it. Carnal, yeah, but I'm talking about the actual biblical words that God describes it. What comprises the flesh? All that the flesh is? Huh? Sinfulness, that's true. In Adam, that's true. But that's not the passage I'm not going to fish anymore. That's okay. It's fine. It's not what you said is right. That's fine. But over in 1 John, when John has to confront the remnant of Israel about the dangers of them following down the wrong path and some of the things that they're going to have to encounter out there, he comes along, and you all know these verses, but he talks about the course of this world feeding all three categories of lust. And he says there in 1 John 2:16, for all that is in the world, I feel like Andy and Barney, when Barney's trying to quote the Constitution, the preamble of the Constitution, one of the greatest things TV ever had. Andy winds up giving, if you pay attention to that, Andy gives him every single word. Barney didn't get one word. I think you'll get this with the next word. All that is in the world, the lust of the, okay, the lust of the, that's right, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. I thought you knew that verse real well. Okay. Sorry. I wouldn't have been fishing if I just assumed that was, man, how is it? All that is in the world, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And he goes on to say, by the way, there, it's not of the Father, but of the world. Well, Satan knows the ready ally that's in you of that nature of sin that's still there, with sin still in your members, and what will appeal to it, what it will desire, and the powerful avenues in which he can make inroads through the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And the course of this world is designed to exploit those lusts. Everything in it, he is designed to exploit those lusts, to feed those lusts and feed them. The lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. You can go all the way back. He knew what he was doing when he tempted Eve in the Garden of Eden, and you can find it all right there in Genesis 3, where Eve and Adam both were tempted, and they had things that their eyes desired. They had things that their flesh desired. And it all drove at their pride to lift themselves up as something. And you have Satan designing. Listen, don't make the mistake. I'll just tell you this right now, and I don't mean to belittle you by saying this. Don't make this mistake that you've got this world figured out. Because folks, I'm telling you, I don't think you've got your eyes open yet to how powerful the course of this world is, even in residual areas of our own inner man that has been exposed to it over the course of time you and I have been alive on this earth, especially the period of time before we were believers and before we got sound doctrine. And the adversary knows how to feed that lust. And he's designed the course of this world to develop those lusts and to have the course follow those lusts. And the things that are, do you realize the things that are done by men are done by men of this world are done by because of all three of those things. Those men and women who sit in Congress are doing what they're doing because of those three things: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And the issue is that even though we are justified, sanctified saints, with the power of sin broken, we're dead to sin, the truth of the matter is that sin is still in our members, and when that's combined, melded with, mated with, having to live in this world and in the environment of the course of this world, being the only environment we've ever known, the only other environment you will ever know will be the environment of God's living words living in you. And therefore, sin in our members is going to make that appeal to us to follow a path that it can feed on. It's going to appeal to us to follow a path in connection with either the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, or all three, or all in a combination of there. And when we therefore choose to opt out of walking our Father's path, one of those sonship graces, we end up walking one of the paths of this world. That's why in Proverbs, as soon as the Father knew that his son had made the decision to not be a fool, but to be a wise son, from the outset, because he's made that decision, and he's going to invoke, because of that decision, he's going to invoke the opposition from the world that's naturally sitting there ready to react to godliness. And every decision that son now makes from now on is going to be met with opposition from this world. And since that's the case, that's why when God probes your heart, there in Romans 8, 34, in connection to you being your own worst enemy, whereby you could opt out of following his paths of the sonship graces for your vocational training. And he says, who is he that condemneth? And you instead opt for following a path of the course of this world, and because of doing that, become condemned in your thinking to the point where you now view yourself as so wretched that you just want to throw in the towel and give up. That's why he says in the corresponding exhortation, he keepeth the paths of judgment. Because the paths of judgment is the issue of the son making decisions to walk a particular path of sonship righteousness. That's what he's chosen to do. He's walking a particular path of sonship righteousness, and a good path, not an ungodly, worldly path. That's why it's paths plural. You're not going to just walk one. There's going to be a bunch of these that your father says, okay, you've been down this one, now let's go down this one. There's some training you need down this way, and there's some training you need down this way. And the issue is that every time you as a son make that decision, the world is going to be there with its enticements to walk another path. And built in, here's the thing. The reason why this is so important, it says, he keepeth the paths. Well, how does he do that? Is he going to knock us back onto it? Is there some kind of spiritual inertia? Do we become a spiritual magnet that we just kind of get attracted to his paths more than the others? No, it's not how it works. That's cheap. There's something far greater than that and more powerful than that. When you make the decision and to walk the path of your father, the world's going to be there with its enticements to walk another path, but here's the kicker. He's going to keep the paths of judgment. Built into the curriculum itself, he wrote into it and placed into it the power, the capacity, and the ability for you to make those righteous path decisions. And also built into it is the provision for when you as a son foolishly do opt for going in a worldly direction, the father has things that he's put in the curriculum that's designed to give him the capacity to get that son back on the paths of judgment. And that's the issue in keeping the paths of judgment. It's not the issue of making it so the son never makes a wrong decision. That's going to happen, folks. And he doesn't make this so that you'll never make a wrong decision. And the reason for that is, as an adult son, you're given the ability to make your own choice, your own decision, all on your own. But the issue is that he thought this out and built this into the curriculum so that it has the capacity for you, listen, to recover from a lousy, bum, poor decision and to get back on making proper and right decisions. And for us, that godly remedy of Romans 8:34 is the mechanical means for us as sons to recover from the paths of the world when we choose to get back on the paths of judgment that our Father has to offer us. And Christ goes to bat. He makes intercession so that we don't become wretched and quit in our own minds, but with his viewpoint of not throwing stones at us and not chewing us out and tearing us a new one, we understand that he has in the curriculum the provision to recover from lousy decisions and get going and making proper and right decisions and choosing paths of judgment once again. And that's a big issue. So I'm sure there's more we could wring out of this, but we're really out of time. But that covers it sufficient enough so that you should be able to see, okay, now I can see how this connects. Because it's not just that I'm going to say, oh, I don't think I like that. But you have now the world designed by its design to offer you immediately an alternative path to follow. And you can't be pathless. You're going to be on one. And one of these, sometimes it's very possible that you could early on find yourself trotting down that path and you've gone 100 yards down it and you all of a sudden realize, man, this was wrong. Well, that's pretty easy to recover from. Just go from point B back to point A and take a right or whatever. But there's other times where that can almost cripple you in your inner man. And that book you hold in your hand right now has the power, capacity, and the ability designed in those words to handle those enticements of the sinners and of the world and to keep your paths of judgment. Pretty powerful. And as you could say at the end of every one of these sessions, why in the world would you not willingly present yourself as a living sacrifice? What could possibly be standing in your way? Well, we'll stop right there. That leaves us with one more. On Sunday morning, we'll take up the issue of preserveth the way of his saints. And as you know by now, that has to do with the fifth probing question, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Well, God has something he's built into the curriculum to preserve the singular way. And that ought to make a lot of sense now, why that's singular. Because it's not the loves of Christ, it's the love singular of Christ. Well, we'll start right there on Sunday morning with our heads bowed.